This is the Left Pod. Good afternoon and welcome to the Learn English Football Podcast with your hosts, Tim and...
Tom. Hello, Tim. How are you?
Well, Tom, it's been a complicated morning, to be honest. We're having lots of technology problems, Wi-Fi problems, connection problems, microphone problems. So, Tom, I can just hope that Arsenal's preparations for this weekend's football have gone better. What about you, Tom? How's your day and your week going?
Yes, well, certainly you're right. We've had gremlins messing with our technology today. So we give our apologies in advance to listeners if the sound quality is not as good as normal. But apart from this, I think we're about an hour and a half late recording. Now we are up and running. I feel relieved. And I think it's all downhill from now, meaning that it's going to be easy because the talking is the easy bit. Let's be honest.
It certainly is when you've not got a technological mind. We are what we can... Well, I am certainly, Tom, a technophobe. What is a technophobe?
Yeah, you've got a phobia of technology.
Yeah, I'm not a big fan of technology. Anyway, Tom, it's been an important week for English football. For sad reasons, we lost an absolute legend of the English game this week, Bobby Charlton. A Manchester United legend, no doubt about it, and an England legend. 49 goals for his country from midfield, 106 caps. For a long time, he was England's greatest ever goal scorer. And let me just emphasise again, from midfield, he wasn't a striker. He wasn't renowned for his penalty taking like Harry Kane. Back in the day, we didn't play away friendly matches against some of the kind of smaller nations. So you could probably argue that his 49 goals were a lot harder to score than some of the goals scored by players these days. Obviously, Tom, it was a different generation of football. We're talking the 1960s, 1970s. Of course, he won the World Cup for England. He was considered by Pelé to be at Pelé's level, the representative of that famous England team. So, Tom, is there anything, obviously, being a West Ham fan, you'll probably associate that England side that won the World Cup with the West Ham players. But I think a lot of people internationally and around the country associate that England side with Bobby Charlton. Would you agree with that? And do you have anything to add about Bobby Charlton? Of course, he was remembered this week at Old Trafford.
I would agree with that. He was the star player. He was the player where you had journeyman, workman-like, strong, tough footballers around him like Nobby Styles and Jack Charlton. And the tactics from the manager was always, give the ball to Bobby. Your job is to break up play and then pass it to Bobby, and then Bobby will create something. So he was the star of that team, among many, of course. As a West Ham fan, I have to mention Bobby Moore as well, the captain who lifted the cup. But his career speaks for itself. He was actually part of the Manchester United team in 1957 that had the terrible flight disaster on the flight back from Bayern Munich at the Munich airport, where many of the team were lost. They died in a plane crash in terrible weather conditions. Bobby Moore survived that and went on to become a fantastic player. So in many ways, it was a miracle that he was able to continue playing, and he made the most of it. He probably felt in some sense that he was destined to be one of the best footballers. So it has been sad, but as someone who has grown up hearing about Bobby Robson, I know that he was much
Bobby
loved.
Charlton.
Sorry, Bobby Charlton, not Bobby Robson. Yeah, I'm thinking of
the last
Bobby.
Time you said Bobby Moore.
Yeah, that's right.
It's a common name, Bobby, back in the day, wasn't it?
Yes, it was. Yes, it's short for Robert, of course. But we saw him in the stands at Old Trafford after his retirement. He was very involved in Manchester United. So it's a big loss for Manchester United Football Club and fans especially.
Yeah, and there was a very nice remembrance at the stadium, both before the match and in the days leading up to the match in the Champions League. And that brings us into our first match, really, Tom. Let's get down to the football. Manchester United were in action in the Champions League this week at home to FC Copenhagen, which, of course, there were some family connections between Rasmus Hojlund, who, of course, plays for Manchester United, and I believe his older brother is in the Oscar Hojlund is in the Copenhagen squad. And Copenhagen, I think Hojlund played about five or six games for Copenhagen, and then they sold him on for what they considered was good money at the time. I think it was about £2 million, €2 million. Of course, they'll be regretting that that sale now for such small amounts of money. But Tom, unlikely heroes for Manchester United. Of course, they won 1-0. And if I had to say to you, Tom, who are the worst performing players for Manchester United this season, I imagine you would name a defender with a famously large forehead.
Harry Maguire.
Yes. And you would probably also name a goalkeeper with a bigger reputation than successful save statistics.
I believed you called him Butterfingers Onana.
Yes, well, Tom, I have to eat my words. And also with Harry Maguire, because he has had some good performances in recent weeks. Harry Maguire got the goal, 72nd minute, from a Christian Eriksen assist. And then deep into stoppage time, you got to remember this was a stadium packed full of emotion. Erik ten Hag had spoken about winning it for Bobby, winning it for Bobby's family. So to say that and then not get the victory would have been a real blow to Manchester United. And deep into injury time, Onana saved the victory with a penalty save. So I think you've got to say hats off to both Harry Maguire and Andre Onana, because the pressure at a club like Manchester United is enormous, especially when you're under the spotlight, you're under the media spotlight, which means the media are focusing on you. So I think fair play to those two players. I think the mental challenge, they've got over a real mental challenge, and they're performing as they should perform. So yeah, Tom, what do you think? Do you think this could be a corner for Onana especially? Do you think this could be the beginning of his United career?
I think so. Often, in a role as crucial as goalkeeping, confidence is vital. And being the, last minute saviour of the match for Manchester United is going to put a spring in his step, meaning he's going to be extra confident around training. And I think he will carry that into his next matches. And we will see the kinds of performances coming up that we saw last season at Inter Milan. Inter Milan or Napoli? I think he was
Inter Milan. Previously Ajax and Inter Milan. So yeah, he's got to a Champions League semi-final with Ajax and now a Champions League final with Inter Milan. So hopefully he doesn't go one better with Manchester United. Moving on, Tom, of course, on Tuesday night, I wasn't watching Manchester United. I was watching Arsenal Sevilla away at Sevilla. And this was an interesting match because you've got a kind of European heavyweight historically like Arsenal against a European heavyweight, I'd say a European middleweight in Sevilla, because they've dominated the middleweight division in terms of the Europa League over the past 10, 15 years. But they've always had problems stepping up to the Champions League. And this was a difficult match away in Seville. And Arsenal, I must say, Tom, I was very impressed with them. It was a professional performance. It was 2-1, but Arsenal were 2-0 up in this game and it could have been more. Before Seville got the goal back. Of course, Seville are a good side, and when they did get the goal back, there were some nervy moments in the last 10, 15 minutes. But it was a great performance from Gabriel Jesus. He created the first goal with a wonderful turn and pass to an on-running Martinelli, who went around the goalkeeper and put it in the back of the net. And then for the second goal, Jesus, a great finish from the edge of the area. And a lot of questions have been asked about Jesus this season because he's had injury problems. He hasn't been clinical in front of goal, and I think he answered some questions midweek, and it was nice to see. I must say, Sergio Ramos did impress me, Tom. He's still performing at a very high level, and it makes me think maybe he could have stayed another season or another two seasons at Real Madrid. If you think of some of the problems they've got with not so much now, but previously with Militao, he's still performing at a very high level. Tom, did you catch any matches on the Tuesday night?
On the Tuesday night, I did. Yes, I tuned into Newcastle United against Borussia Dortmund. The result was 1-0 to Borussia Dortmund. They won away from home on a wet, not just wet, it was hammering it down. It was pouring. I could say it was raining cats and dogs, but we don't really say that in England, in English. You only hear about us saying that. But let's just say it was a miserable night if you weren't a Dortmund fan. It made it conditions very difficult for many of the players, particularly in midfield and attack. Some Newcastle players stepped up to the plate, meaning they performed at the level required. Anthony Gordon caught the eye. The midfield was breaking down a little bit, though. It was a tough night for Longstaff, a tough night for the Brazilians, Joe Linton and Bruno Guimarães in midfield. Passes were going astray. But I also think we have to give credit to Borussia Dortmund. Before the game, I was asking the question, how good is this team? We know this was the team that really should have won the German Bundesliga last season, but to use an idiom in reverse, they snatched defeat from the jaws of victory. Normally we say snatch victory from the jaws of defeat, but they were in pole position with three games to go and they lost it. Then they've lost their star player, or one of them, Jude Bellingham. So there were certainly questions about the quality, the level of this team. And I have to say, they answered all those questions very convincingly. Tactically, I thought they were excellent. They were working the ball up through midfield, playing little wall passes, or we call them 1-2 passes off their number nine, but they had players closely around, so they were able to get through the middle, attack in numbers. Malen, I think he's called Daniel Malen, he's a Dutch right winger playing for Dortmund, was very, very strong, very, very dangerous. But the actual star of that game was their centre-back, a 23-year-old called Schlotterberg. He is highly rated in Germany. He's valued at 40 million euros. He broke up the play. He made an important tackle to win the ball, played it forward, and then he galloped forward himself, supporting his midfield player with an overlap on the left side, controlled it in an attacking area, and played a perfect cross for the goal scorer, Nmecha. He still had a lot of work to do to put a precise finish past Nick Pope, but he did very, very well with the finish. But the credit goes to Schlotterberg, who really made the goal, not just with the assist, but the tackle before. Then after that, we saw the second half Newcastle trying, but actually they had limited opportunities. The best chances fell to Wilson, Callum Wilson. He had a good chance. He probably should have scored. Late on, he had a much harder header, which he had to sort of get with the back of his head or his ear, and it bounced off the bar. That was in stoppage time. But I have to say, overall, Borussia Dortmund looked very, very good for the victory, and it makes that group very, very interesting. I think we can call that one the group of death, because you have Paris Saint-Germain now who won. I think we'll come to that game briefly. They've got 6 points. Dortmund have 4 points. Newcastle 4 points. AC Milan 2 points. But with three games to go, I think things could change around quite a lot.
Oh, it's all to play for. That really is a heavyweight group. I think when you're looking at Dortmund in the Champions League, you're looking at a side who have got a wealth of experience. And for a club like Newcastle, OK, they've got the good players, but they're not used to lots of factors involved in European football, the style of refereeing, the time that you have to wait to regain possession because it's not the Premier League. Even simple things like playing two games a week and having less time on the training ground, I think can have an impact. And especially after the Newcastle result against Paris Saint-Germain recently, I think this will really bring Newcastle back down to earth, which means to bring them back to reality. Yeah, Tom, a result which I was a bit disappointed about because it's been a long time since they've got a victory in Europe. Celtic, Atletico Madrid. Celtic were winning twice in the match. They went 1-0 up and then Atletico equalised. And then they went 2-1 up and then Atletico equalised again. And I think Celtic have now gone 5 years or so without winning a game in the Champions League. And it's something like 2012, 2014, since they last won a European knockout game in any format of European football. So, Tom, I mean, it's obviously it's a good result, I suppose, for Atletico Madrid to halt, to get back and get the draw, after, especially with only 10 men. But this is another tight group, Tom. You've got Feyenoord on 6 points, you've got Atletico Madrid on 5 points, you've got Lazio on 4 points. I think we can say that the Celtic have been cut adrift, which means that they're disconnected from the rest of the teams in the group. But it's an exciting group, Tom. I've got a Feyenoord friend who's very excited about this Feyenoord side. They're playing lovely stuff in the Eredivisie. Of course, they're league champions. And the question is really, Tom, who do you think is going to qualify from this group? Do you think Atletico and Lazio can turn it round and go through? Or do you think Feyenoord might hang on?
I think because of the start Feyenoord have made with 2 victories out of 3 games, I expect them to hang on. However, with 3 games to go, I expect Atletico Madrid to overtake them to finish first in the group, just again due to their experience, their Champions League pedigree. Lazio will put up a fight. We know they're a talented team, but I think Feyenoord, those 2 extra points they've got right now will make a difference after 6 games, and they'll squeeze through in second place.
Yeah. Tom, you touched upon it earlier, the Paris Saint-Germain AC Milan result. I didn't watch the game, but I did see two of the... I know, I've seen all of the goals. The Mbappe goal was a lovely goal, and it made me think how difficult it is to defend against a player like Mbappe, because the defender, he defended him in such a way where he wasn't able to go past him. So I think the defender must have been quite comfortable, feeling quite comfortable up until the point when Mbappe was about to shoot. And the goalkeeper was probably thinking, well, he's not going to beat me at my near post because he's shaping up to go far post. But suddenly, the defender doesn't need to be beaten. Mbappe's found space for the shot and he's banged it in the near post where the goalkeeper's been left planted on his feet. So it is almost the impossible prospect to defend against Kylian Mbappe when he's running at you with space. But I think the difference, and I do like this Paris Saint-Germain side this season, I think the biggest difference to the way they're playing is not Mbappe. It's the Vitinha, the little Portuguese player. He's an incredibly technical player. He's able to receive the ball in all sorts of areas, and he always seems to be able to turn on the ball and turn into the areas where the defender doesn't want him to go. I think he might be the most impressive player in this Paris Saint-Germain team. Tom, I don't say, have you seen any of Vitinha? And also another player I'd like to comment on is Zaire Emery, a player who's come through the ranks at Paris Saint-Germain. He's been given his chance under Luis Enrique this season, and he's been highly spoken of for seasons, for a long time. But at Paris Saint-Germain, of course, it is hard to break into the side. But it's an impressive-looking Paris Saint-Germain side. It's a more humble-looking side. They've got no Neymar, no Messi. They've got an all-French front three of Dembele, Mouani and Mbappe. And so maybe you could really think that they could be able to develop some cohesion. What do you think of it all, Tom?
First of all, Vitinha, I saw glimpses of the talent he had last season in Champions League. He'd looked a little underdeveloped, meaning physically. I wasn't sure if he was of the stature, the size that sometimes you need to be able to hold your own in midfield, to hold your own, meaning to keep your opponents at distance and not be dominated physically. But technically, I think, yes, we could see him really come through now. I also think that there is strength in depth with the substitutes. Gonzalo Ramos, he came on as a sub late on, but he was, in one word, prolific for Benfica last season with his goal scoring. And Lee Kang-in, a player we've talked about who has been at Mallorca in Spain for the last couple of seasons, who's a creative, another playmaker. So I think there has been strength in depth. The question is, with these players, do they have enough leaders? Do they have enough winners. Sometimes a player you mentioned, for example, Sergio Ramos, who's gone back to Sevilla. There is a player who might not look so technical on the ball, but is undoubtedly a player with an extra mental strength that can carry his team to victory. I wonder if Paris Saint-Germain have enough of these players in their squad to certainly, I think they're outsiders for the Champions League, but we'll see in the years to come if they can develop this mental strength.
Yeah, I think you're right. Anyway, Tom, moving on to the Europa League. I think we've finished with Champions League football for the time being. West Ham are in action this week, I believe. And it's been a tricky week for you so far, hasn't it? Because at the weekend, you had the match-up to be considered the best of the rest in terms of Premier League challenges against Aston Villa. And you found it a tough encounter. And this weekend, this midweek, sorry, you're away to Olympiakos. Do you want to tell us a bit about it?
Yes. I was hoping the Aston Villa game on Sunday was just a blip in our good start to the season. A blip mean, a gap in the good form we've had so far. Aston Villa did comfortably beat us 4-1 at the weekend. So I was hoping that we would be better against Olympiakos, but I have to say they were the better team and they did deserve to win. It's notable considering that the value of their squad is 101 million euros compared with West Ham with a 470 million squad. So on paper, we should be, even going away from home, we should be getting a result there, especially with a 17-game unbeaten run in Europe. However, in reality, the stadium where they play, I think it's in Athens, is extremely intimidating. They create a fantastic atmosphere there. And they deservedly went ahead. It was in Spanish, they would say a golazo, a fantastic goal. That was a wonder goal from, in my opinion, their best player. He was called Fortunes. If you are a follower of Greek football, you'll no doubt be familiar with Fortunes already. I wasn't aware of him, but I am now. He's certainly on my radar, even though he's 31 years old. So I'm not sure if he's on the right side of 30. He might be a bit too old to be coming and dominating at a bigger European club. He certainly has the capacity and the quality to do so. The goal he scored was great. He turned back the other way. It was a nice, we'd call it an outside hook turn to leave James Ward-Prowse in, and found some space and then just powered a fantastic shot, leaving Areola no chance. That was the first goal. It was well deserved. The second goal was a defensive blunder. A blunder? What is a blunder, Tim?
A blunder is a massive error, a mistake.
It was a massive error, and it was our normally reliable, experienced veteran centre-back, Ogbonna, and his second blunder of the season, actually. He's only really been playing in Europe, and this one was terrible. It was just a fairly comfortable cross that was coming in. Areola possibly has some fault here because he should have called in a very loud voice, goalkeeper's ball, let Ogbonna know that the goalkeeper was claiming it. Instead, Ogbonna was a bit worried about the attacker he was marking and stretched out a foot at the last minute, and it just deflected off his leg past Areola into the net. It was a terrible own goal. It was terrible because it was totally unnecessary. It meant we went in at halftime 2-0 down because it was on the stroke of halftime, meaning exactly on 45 minutes. In the second half, we tried. Moyes did make an attacking substitution. He brought on three of our best players, Antonio and Paquetar, and there was one other attacking player. But Paquetar did get a great volley late on with 86 minutes played, but we deserved to lose that game. And it again makes things very interesting in that group. Olympiakos have showed that they've got the quality to challenge now. I think Freiburg are top of the group, West Ham are second, Olympiakos are third now. So there's three teams competing there and it could be quite close.
Yeah, it does look like a tight group. I mean, you think Europa League qualification from the group stage. I mean, the English sides have always taken that for granted, but it's not Ian Carter. And it's not only just West Ham who are in that situation. You could also consider Brighton, who are currently third in their group behind Marseille and AEK Athens. They had a big result yesterday, a 2-0 victory against Ajax. But the Europa League's starting to look a bit more interesting in terms of some of the bigger names and better matches that are appearing there in relation to what we used to find a few seasons ago. Tom, Arsenal West Ham in the Cup next week. So I imagine we'll be talking about that on next week's episode. But it is the Carling Cup, which some people would refer to as the Mickey Mouse Cup. Does that mean it's a serious competition or not a serious competition in the eyes of some arrogant big club supporters? Yes,
it isn't taken as seriously. You will see that many of the big clubs use it as an opportunity to play their second string players or their squad players who are normally warming the bench. I don't know if it will be the case for West Ham and Arsenal. I expect probably more for Arsenal. But having said that, West Ham don't have a great record in the League Cup. And I think Moyes may want to keep his powder dry. We say that, keep his gunpowder dry, meaning preserve his best players for the league and the Europa League. So I'm not expecting the best players to be playing in that one.
Yeah, and the game I'm looking forward to this weekend, Tom, is Manchester United against Manchester City at Old Trafford. Again, it'll be an opportunity to remember Bobby Robson with the City fans. There were a small section of the Manchester City fans who were celebrating his death in the stadium. I just want to take a moment to say that that's disgusting. Football needs to be better than that. Again, we've gone back to self-policing in the past, but people need to take responsibility for themselves and for the people around them and how their club's represented. But Tom, this could be an interesting match. I'm not going to ask you who's favourites because I think we all know Manchester City are favourites. But following a not very convincing 2-1 victory against Sheffield United and again, a not very convincing 1-0 home victory against FC Copenhagen, how much of a defeat, Tom, do you think, how big a defeat do you think would put big pressure on Erik ten Hag? I think our regular listeners will remember last week I was predicting that this time next year, Erik ten Hag won't be the United manager. But I'm thinking a 3-0 victory or a 3-1 victory could really crank up the pressure on ten Hag. To crank up means to increase considerably. Tom, do you think Manchester United could compete, or do you think this could be the beginning of a difficult period for Erik ten Hag?
I think Manchester United, even though their home form has been poor this season, or lucky, you could argue, certainly against Copenhagen, certainly with Scott McTominay's two late goals the other week. I think that they will come out firing. They will try and, you know, what they lack in perhaps technical quality, they will compensate for in efforts. They will have the home fans demanding it of them. I still think Manchester City should win on the day, but we also have to consider that Manchester City have not been in their best form themselves. So I think that this will be more competitive than perhaps, you know, it might look on paper at the moment between these clubs.
Well, I'm sure all the neutrals hope you're right, Tom. Tom, I think that's all we've got time for on the podcast today. A delayed podcast. It's been an absolute pleasure to chat football with you, as always. So look forward to hopefully watching the West Ham Arsenal match together next week.
Yep. Let's hope that, I'm not going to say anything because obviously we know which teams we support. But I just want to thank our listeners for listening to us and wish you and your team the best of luck in the weekend's fixtures.
Okay, Tom. Thanks a lot. Thanks to our listeners. See you next time.
Bye-bye.